Back together, you and I, on Tuesday, February 8th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the show wondering why very few folks are taking time to point out the apparent double standard between the Joe Rogan controversy and the NFL's Super Bowl halftime show. Fairfield Republican State Senator Tony Wong called in to talk about an ongoing public hearing regarding the governor's executive orders, and Republican State Rep Greg Howard, who's the ranking member on the Public Safety Committee, joined us to shed light on Governor Lamont's latest gun control ideas. I'm touching on that as one of my ongoing themes here regarding, regarding duplicity, regarding, don't do as I say, do as I do, or the reverse, or, you know, just regarding hypocrisy. And the thing that drives me the craziest in any time we have discussions about key issues, big issues that everybody has to take a social stand on, is hypocrisy. Look, if you're going to be consistent, then if we're going to tackle tough things, we really need to be, you know, consistent on them and understand that a consistent line of thinking, a consistent line of reasoning is best in the end. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, let's take a look at a scenario now, and we're building up toward the Super Bowl, right? The Super Bowl is coming up on Sunday, and always a big point of discussion for the Super Bowl, largely for people that aren't interested in the game, is the halftime entertainment at the Super Bowl. Now, the NFL, coming up in a few days on Sunday, is going to be presenting a bunch of, you know, hip-hop and rap stars. Now, let me say something about hip-hop and rap music. I generally don't listen to it. More power to people that do, to people that create it, to people that make money off it. Listen, if you can do something, if you have an art form, if you have a music form or forum that you can legally make money in, go ahead and do it. Nobody forces anyone to listen to anybody who makes a form of music, whether they like it or not. We have freedom to do that. It's part of the freedoms in this country. There are people who love rap, hate rap, love rock, can't stand rock, love R&B, hate R&B, country, bluegrass, opera, whatever it is. So I just find it interesting that you have people that will and are booked to perform Sunday at the Super Bowl, which is the penultimate one-day sports event every year in America. And I know people said, well, no, it's the Indy 500, the greatest single day. No, it's not. I put the Indy 500 single day event. The Indy 500 is probably a number two right now. Number one is the Super Bowl. It's been that way for years, and it'll, you know, go on until some meteorite takes out the planet here. And you would think that the people, well, it does happen. The people that play the Super Bowl halftime are largely there to draw people in who might not be watching the game, right? So now we look at a group of performers on Sunday who have, well, they've made their money saying some really bad things. Now, I'm not going to read back some of these lyrics I found online. They're there. You can go ahead and look up any lyric you want for Dr. Dre or Snoop Dogg or Eminem and Mary J. Blige and Kendrick Lamar. And there's some pretty, well, there's some pretty bad stuff there. In fact, the N-word is used in those lyrics over and over and over and over and over again. The B-word to refer to a woman. A lot of these lyrics, graphically depict violence against police. Now, I know what some people say, well, that doesn't mean what the artists really think. They're just portraying what goes on in the community. Yet, the National Football League, which now has all this stuff on helmets and on the field and racism. It takes all of us, bring us together, stop violence. They're going to have a bunch of people on that stage on Sunday, you know, some worse than others, who sing about violence from time to time, who rap using misogynistic words or misogynistic phrases, who openly brag about gun violence. Yet these people were chosen by the National Football League to be up there. You see where I'm going? I don't quite understand it. It seems like three quarters of the country is just completely wrapped up, you know, clutching their pearls over Joe Rogan's use of the N-word. Should he have used it? No, I don't think so. It's not a good word. People sometimes use it in private. They shouldn't, but humans being what they are, what they do, it happens. So explain to me, please, because I'm confused. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. How is it? Is there any bit of consistency here that allows people who to entertain at the single biggest sporting event in the nation every year? You know, you take a look at Snoop Dogg's lyrics, and I know, oh, he's cute, he does good commercials, he sells beer, he's Martha Stewart's friend. And listen, I don't besmirch him for making money. More power to these people. He and Dr. Dre and Eminem and Mary J. Blige and Kendrick Lamar and anybody in that genre of music. If there's an audience for it, fine, okay. There's also apparently an audience for what Joe Rogan is saying. Well, Paul, Joe Rogan was using the N-word in a derogatory sense. Okay. Well, you know, rappers use it because it's used in the community. Oh, so it's okay on one end, but it's not okay on the other? Explain that to me. How is that possible? How is that possible? Again, it just occurred to me a couple of hours before the show, oh my God, this one now with Joe Rogan again, and you have Spotify saying they're going to, well, we're going to dedicate $100 million to underserved artists. Well, most of the artists that are underserved because they stink, because they don't have any talent. But man, that's basically Spotify paying people off to be quiet. That's known as protection money in a mob movie. So help me out here. I have no idea what we're doing here as far as trying to prevent a double standard. You know? It's mind-numbing. Have you ever heard of the country star Morgan Wallen? You ever heard of him? You probably haven't. Because Morgan Wallen a few years ago was seen on a video posted by TMZ using the N-word. A white guy using the N-word. He probably shouldn't have done it. He said he shouldn't have. He's donating money to some minority causes. He is, he's repentant, I believe, the guy. But country music award shows won't even entertain having him on anymore. His stuff is, I think, ineligible for awards, which is fine. They can do that. They're a private organization. This is not a government-funded organization. So again, let me ask, why is it okay that the NFL books people like, you know, for example, Snoop Dogg, some of whose lyrics use the N-word over and over and over and over again, openly talk about shooting cops, openly refer to women as the B-word and hoes and all that. And the NFL puts these people up there at the same time that Morgan Wallen can't catch a cold on a national appearance. You think Morgan Wallen would be booked for the Super Bowl? But yet, his streams are in the billions, and he still sells out concerts. Much the way that there is a cadre of listenership that doesn't mind what rappers say. So in this way, it is pretty consistent. People will make their minds up. But I invite you, look up the lyrics of some of these rappers and hip-hop artists that'll be that'll be performing at the Super Bowl on Sunday. Okay, the NFL is a private organization. They can hire whomever they want, but talk about the hypocrisy, the duplicity, as this thing with Joe Rogan goes on and on and on. Were any of these people that just have their hair in a wad now, whatever, their eyes crossed, clutching pearls, anybody concerned with some of the other stuff that Spotify allows people to stream? Now, I happen to think anybody should be able to listen to anything on a closed system that they want to. But, oh, my God, the duplicity, the sheer, unadulterated inconsistency about this. Why is that? Morgan Wallen gets gonged because he used the N-word. Joe Rogan's getting gonged because he used the N-word. Okay, a lot of people don't like that. Good on you. I agree. But certain people are allowed to use it. And not only are they allowed to use it, they're allowed to put it on arguably, in the middle of arguably, the number one sports spectacle of the year. Now, obviously, I don't think they're going to sing stuff or rap to stuff with bad language on Sunday. I don't think the network's going to let them do that. But do you think they would allow Morgan Wallen to appear at the Super Bowl? Come on. You think they'd allow a metal band or a country act, another country act, or an R&B group that had the same lyrics that some of these rappers do? Would the NFL allow that? But yet this is the league that says, oh, and racism. We can all do this together. And violence. Really? Really? The inconsistency, folks, the hypocrisy is so thick you can cut it with a knife. There is never a dull day of governance here in the People's Republic of Connecticut. I'm kidding. I'm the only kid there. But it does make people laugh when I say that. And public hearings underway today, I believe virtually, regarding an extension of the executive orders or not. How's it all going? Well, our roving reporter is with us once again. Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong is with us. Tony, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I am great. Thanks for the promotion. I'm a Cub reporter now.
Yeah. I'll send you out with a camera crew and a producer and a sound guy. And you'll be... No, Tony, keep selling real estate. Trust me, you're better off. Trust me with that. Oh, man. So what has been the mood, Tony? I understand there were several hundred people signed up to do this as the day dawned. What have you heard from people? What are they saying? Passionate, not passionate? What type of person is offering their opinion on all this?
You know, it was truly an emotionally exhausting hearing. And the hearing was, quote, called a legislative informational hearing on the continuation of the emergency declaration and the governor's limited executive orders. That's a mouthful, right? And the challenge was that they had a limited number of panelists, I believe six of us, who were engaged in hearing testimony, but we literally crammed what would possibly have been 20 hours of potential testimony into 6 hours. And we had the Commissioner of Public Health, the Commissioner of Education, Josh Gabel from the governor's office, spending the first 2 hours explaining the rationale and the reasoning why we should extend the power to the governor. And then remainder of the remaining 4 hours was public comment. But it was only limited to 3 minutes of conversation. Mm-hmm. And for us as a panelist, we all agreed to respect not engaging and not asking questions. So it was almost like speed dating where people would spend their 3 minutes, they get done, and we move on because there was over 360 people ready to testify on a notice that was less than 3 days. And what we had was you were supposed to technically talk about all the different issues, but I would dare say probably 95% of the issue was on the mask mandate. And in 4 hours, if you divide it by the minutes and all that, we got to speak to less than 100 individuals. And the frustration was there was so many emotionality and so much rationale that you wanted to engage with the people. And it seemed so rushed. It seemed so scripted that people got to say and moved on. Even when we had an individual by the name of Jim Cusco, who started a supportive service program because his 16-year-old son, as a result of masks and COVID and isolation, took his own life. And he talked about it, and he talked about COVID not killing his child, but the isolation and the mental impact and crisis that he went through combined with depression. And Jim is remarkable in regards to his willingness to share these tragic stories so that no others would do that. I would have talked all day with Jim. And there was another example of a mother who would never get engaged with political process, more or less debating in a public testimony, talking about going to a card shop with her young daughter in like second grade, I believe. And they go in, they put on the mask, they do everything, they come out, they sit in the car, and the young girl says, "Mom, I want to die so I don't have to wear the mask again." Those are type of emotion that you heard for the few people that we got to. And you wish you could engage more in understanding a little bit why these individuals have been so passionate, Paul. And I thought that we did an injustice by this abbreviated program. It seems like we were kind of scripting all this to justify a means to an end. In fact, I got to be honest with you, the timing of all of this is way too well orchestrated. The governor makes the announcement yesterday. We have the hearing scheduled within 3 days. And then we have the opening of session. And there's going to be a vote on Thursday in the House. And I asked the administration, wait a second. We're having a hearing. We're debating this issue. Where's the bill? Where's the language of the bill that we're talking about? Not available.
Not available. That's good. Tony, hang on. Jeez. We'll be right back with you. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. All right, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We'll get back to open phones later in the hour. Coming up, once again, another check of traffic and weather together. About 5-6 minutes away right here on Connecticut Today. It's Paul Pacelli with you. Producer Eric's over there. We continue with getting a report as to what happened today and what we heard, at least the General Assembly members did, from the few hundred folks who got a few seconds to talk about it with Republican State Senator Tony Wong of Fairfield. You know, Tony, I think the thing that is driving a lot of the frustration here, Tony, is the mixed, at least at this point, Tony, of the pandemic. Two things, mixed messages and mixed images here, where, you know, we hear from medical professionals, and Lord knows I've had a few dozen of them on over the past 2 years on this show, saying, hey, listen, kids, young kids are actually strongest against this virus. And if you're an adult and you get your shots, you're okay. So they hear that, coupled with, Tony, the images they see coming from, you know, sports arenas that are full now, concert venues that are full. And I think, Tony, to my utterly untrained eye here, that a lot of people are just, you know, Tony, they're just frustrated with this. They don't know what to make of it. I think I could be wrong.
Well, it's absolutely correct. The inconsistency in messaging of imagery and application. We did not impose a mask mandate by this governor since the onset of this. It was left to the local municipalities.
Yeah.
But Paul, I got to tell you, we talked about the timing too well orchestrated. You talk about the frustration. We had 360 people sign up, okay? It's supposed to be a random lottery, right? You sign up, you throw it around, and you randomly get. So I've talked to someone who was 340, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bad luck. What shocked them was the Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers, two separate teachers union, were amazingly number one and number two.
See, Tony, that is the kind of thing that people call this station and shows like this and people around the state that do these shows. And, Tony, it's sad because – and it must make you angry because – people will call me and say, see, Paul, the system is rigged. It is rigged. And I don't know what you tell those people, Tony Wong. I have no idea. Well, what do you tell them?
I am glad that they were able to testify and give the viewpoints and perspective. All go. But to have them be 1 and 2 in a supposed random lottery, what do you say to the person who was 340 and could not speak today and not have their voices be heard? Oh, you can submit testimony. But I'm going to tell you, whatever's written in paper was nothing ever close to what Jim Cusco and many others who articulated what happened with their children. The line that left me the most impact is these parents saying, what do I say to a child that's burdened with the responsibility that they have to wear a mask so that they can protect the adults? What a flip-flop. That they're forced to wear masks to protect the adults. It seems to be such a disproportionate messaging and application. And these children who are at the stage of vulnerability, they're never, ever going to challenge their adults
sure.
and their teachers.
Sure.
And the data doesn't lie. We've had a youth mental health crisis. I've got budgets in Board of Education that are increasing at significant numbers to deal with adolescent anxiety, speech therapy. It's a systematic another phrase that hit me the most, Paul, is when is the cure more dangerous than the risk?
And certainly, Tony, when it comes to the mask, and look, we have, you know, I don't want to say settled science, but pretty good science behind the vaccines here. But again, it's the mixed messaging. It's, for example, you know, parents able to go online and see, you know, Tony, from reputable news sources that you have other nations who have ended their school masking. And you know what, Tony? Here's the fear, I think. And I've said this over and over the past couple of weeks. Look, we know this is going to end sometime. However, I think there is a fear, Tony, that the last domino, the last mile marker in this, for some people, maybe correctly, maybe not, is going to be school masking. Again, if they hear that their kids or their grandkids' school say, okay, no more masks, that is a signal that that's it, it's done, we're back to normal. Now, that may not be the case, but I think, Tony, there's a fear there of just generally doing that, that too many people are going to say, hey, we're back to square one. I don't know.
Well, I hope not. And this is a true test. We had this type of a process because people on a grassroots level, these remarkable advocates of parents, have spoken out. And I hope it will not be business as usual. And perhaps our politic colleagues will pay attention and really just address the issue and voting one by one, not a lump of 11, not any explanation of extending it, for us to get back to work, because perhaps on election year, people are paying attention. Number two, it's ironic that you started off with the People's Republic of Connecticut. You know, we've had this abbreviated hearing. We are now going into our second year of Zoom virtual meetings in which we put time slots, even though more people are engaged and it takes too long. Democracy is not supposed to be pretty. But I could tell you from parents who escaped from communism in China, who lived under martial law, it's really convenient to govern with absolute power. And when you don't hear the objections and oppositions to what you believe is right when you're in control and power, It becomes the government dictates everything.
Well, and again, Tony, you and I have talked about this in the past. It's, and you have said this, and other politicians have said this, a debate on a screen, Tony, is just not the same as a debate when you've got to look across the aisle or a few feet away at a colleague staring at you or looking you in the eye and saying something. It just, you know, does it affect the vote in the end, Tony? I don't know, but it's simply not the same. I don't think it's good governance. I just don't.
I dare anyone to look at Jim Cusco in the face as he talks about the loss of his son that he'll never be able to hug because we weren't willing to move forward to evaluate different approaches. I dare anyone to look him in the face and his wife to look at the struggle of loss and emotion that they endure and not want to make a change for the better and not maintain the status quo because government thinks better. And that is one of the missing pieces. We've got to get back to representing the people. Look, I know it's a hard job. I know that it's a delicate balancing act and people get emotional. But with all due respect, we're a democracy. We're a representative democracy. We have had too long with unilateral power, with no accountability. And people can't look at their elected officials and say, what did you do to represent me?
Tony, thank you. Appreciate it. We'll be in touch. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you go. Well, you may agree with him, may not. What do you think? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And yet, you know, it's interesting because you see pictures from other parts of the country and not necessarily all red states. You know, you have other legislative bodies that are meeting in person, yes. People are masked up, but, you know, over the last year, year and a half, 2 years, you know, they have been able to do things in person, you know, and govern. And you may say, well, Paul, they can do it over Zoom. Well, yeah, I guess technically they can. But how many of you folks out there listening think that a business meeting that you may have in any business that you're involved with, do you really think that meeting is the same? Maybe some of you do. I don't know. But do you really honestly think that meeting is the same in person as it is on video? I don't think. A lot of folks not happy. A lot of folks scratching their heads over what Governor Ned Lamont said, what he proposed yesterday about public safety and crime, and you read some of it, as I have over the past few days to you, and you say, well, wait a minute, what's with all these new gun laws? Because, or proposals, because by just the definition of criminals don't care. And a lot of folks in the self-defense community, the gun community, the constitutional community are saying, hey, what are we dealing with here? Joining us right now is a Republican State Rep. Greg Howard. He represents District 43. He's the ranking member of the Public Safety Committee. He represents Stonington and North Stonington. And he, along with our buddy Craig Fishbein, put out a statement yesterday regarding some of the things that to me look like another gun control bill. Hey, Greg, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I just learned something new listening to you. So criminals don't follow laws. Wow.
You know, Greg.
Holy smoke.
You know, Greg. It's interesting.
Imagine that.
Yes, and it's interesting because I saw the governor was going to release stuff, and I said, okay, this will be interesting. You know, and crime fighting is a big part of what I like to propose on the show and say, listen, you know, Greg, we don't throw kids in jail for, you know, stealing a candy bar, breaking a window. We
right.
need to have all the proper.
That's right.
We need to have the proper. You know, we need to have the proper system set up, the proper program set up to get these kids. You know, Greg, when they're young, find out what the deal is, see if we can send them on a better way. But again, when a criminal is going to be a repeat criminal, I believe they should be handled with all the force of the law to keep the schools, to keep these schools and streets, you know, safer. So I didn't see too much of that yesterday in these proposals, Greg. What I did see is, again, to me, useless gun laws. What are your thoughts on that?
That's right.
In particular, that you're ranking member on public safety.
Well, I think it's important for everybody to know, too, you know, because I'm from the opposite end of the state. For those who may not know, I'm a ranking member on public safety, but I also spent the last 20 years as a police officer and currently a detective in the town that I serve. And when you talk about juveniles, Paul, I think it's important to know I spent the last 6 years as a youth football coach and president of a youth football organization with 160 athletes. And when my colleagues say, oh, you just want to throw a bunch of kids in jail, it infuriates me. I've never said that. I continue to say the opposite of that, much like you talked about. But, you know, it gets frustrating to watch. And, you know, I listen to the governor say a lot of things, and I listen to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle say a lot of things. And oftentimes I just kind of, you know, shake my head. I disagree and I move on. But yesterday it really was frustrating to see, because the fact of the matter is, if he wants to address crime and say, well, crime has gone up and we have a problem with crime, well, let's talk about the fact that you have completely disenfranchised, demoralized, and in many ways defunded your police force over the last 18 months in this state. Police departments can't get officers. The officers they do have are working 16-hour shifts because they're getting a mandatory overtime time and time again to fill slots. Because guess what? Police departments can't close due to staffing, like a restaurant can or something else. But that's not a thing. So these guys have to work. We've seen the data, you know, over the last several months where car stops are down, self-initiated activity is down, and, you know, many folks, so the Democrats on the other side of the aisle, they like to tout data when data fits their narrative, but when it doesn't, they just ignore it. Several years ago, the NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, in conjunction with the Department of Justice, did a study they called DDACTS, and it stands for Data-Driven Approach to Crime and Traffic Safety.
Mm-hmm.
And they targeted certain areas, and in what they did was they increased traffic enforcement and thereby increased the notable police presence, and they saw violent crime go down across the board. The data shows it. And yet here in Connecticut, we have our car stops are way down and crime is up. And you know why? Legal gun owners. That's why.
Greg, it just seems to me like, and maybe I'm just being too simplistic here, Greg, you tell me, you have the law enforcement background. It seems to me that, Greg, we're just afraid of hurting people's feelings. I don't get this. And Greg, you being a law enforcement officer would know, it's not like lower income people or black and Hispanic people don't want public safety. They want the bad guys off the streets as well.
Yeah, well, that's a balance that we have to work to strike. And that's what, you know, Craig and I spoke about that last Wednesday at a press conference. And we talk about, you know, law enforcement in the community, all communities. There has to be a balance. And we all agree that a police force has to be accountable and transparent. And I remind people, in 2019, the legislature ran a bill that became Public Act 19-90, which was an early iteration of police accountability and transparency, and law enforcement embraced it. There was no pushback because police officers don't mind accountability and transparency. What they mind is a 77-page document that took away their ability to do their job in many respects. And, you know, there's six aspects that we laid out that need to be addressed on that. But for the governor to come, and, you know, it could be hurting people's feelings, as you say, but what I think is really happening is you had the governor who signed that police bill that, you know, perpetuated an anti-police rhetoric in this state and, as I said, demoralized and disenfranchised our police force and discouraged new applicants from coming forward. And rather than say, gee, that didn't work out, maybe we should go back and change it. No, look, guns, you know, election cycle, look, guns. It's because of guns, the legal gun owners.
I don't get
it. I'll tell you why we have
it. Hey, Greg, you know what?
We have it,
Greg, hang on. I got to take a break here. We'll come back. We'll pick that right up where you left off there. State Rep. Greg Howard, Republican, District 43, Stonington and North Stonington. And even more important than that, with a history, a background in law enforcement, so he knows from whence he speaks. Get back to this fascinating topic straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. All right, a few more minutes here with our guest, State Rep. Republican Greg Howard, who is a Republican representing North Stonington and Stonington, also youth football coach, as he explained to us, with a law enforcement background as well. You know, Greg, as I was reading some of this stuff the governor is talking about, you know, Greg, checking or wanting to push to check the permit status of concealed and open carry gun owners, outlawing a type of arm stock for an AR-15 type rifle. I mean, what is this? Greg, maybe I'm missing something. What does this have to do with making our streets safer, coming against legal gun owners? I just don't get it.
Nothing, because legal gun owners is not the problem. I say this in Hartford all the time. When we put a law in that we don't enforce, it becomes a suggestion. It's not a law anymore. You know, so if the governor was serious about crime, he would be calling the judicial system to get serious about gun violence. You know, and the reason, you know, he points to the astronomical number of guns that are, you know, being purchased in this state. The only possible way he would know about that is if it was done legally. Because I'm pretty sure that the criminals aren't keeping a database of when they're bringing in illegal guns, right, and giving the governor access to it. So, and you want to know why we have such an influx in legal guns? Because of the Democrats. I'll tell you right now. What happened was I have done pistol permit applications in my police department for 6 years.
Okay.
And I've watched a steady ebb and flow. So I know exactly how things ebb and flow. When an election cycle comes, we always see an influx of pistol permit applicants. Hmm. Why? Because they're afraid a Democrat's going to get elected and take it away. That's one. You see the same sort of influx in gubernatorial elections, not as high. In 2020, we were in the wake of a pandemic coming into the election cycle. And if you'll remember at the beginning of the pandemic, which we could talk about too, but back in April of 2020, there was almost like an apocalyptic feeling, right? When you went out, there's no one around.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't know
if
grocery stores were going to be open. So there was that feeling. So people were scared, nervous. And, you know, that coupled with all the civil unrest that happened in the summer of 2020 with the election, we saw a massive influx in gun sales, massive influx in pistol permit applications, because people wanted to be prepared if their police department and their government wasn't ready to protect them.
Yeah.
Because nobody knew what was going to happen. So that's what you have. You have legal gun owners going out and purchase guns legally in a state that has the third most restrictive gun laws in the country. You can't buy a bullet in this state without a background check. So we don't need any more gun laws. What we need is an empowered police department that is transparent and accountable. Let's not lose the balance. We need an empowered police department to go out and enforce laws on the street, be incentivized to do it because they're supported and when they're doing things correctly by their government, their legislature, and their governor, and they feel confident that the judicial system is going to respond appropriately and take appropriate consequences against gun violence, people who are illegally in possession of guns, and so on and so forth, and not turn around and erase those records 5 years later, which is another thing that we've decided to do.
State Rep. Greg Howard is with us, Republican, Stonington, North Stonington, 43rd House District. He's the ranking Republican on the Public Safety Committee. You and Craig and your committee posted this in your news release, which I found interesting. And I remember when this was started, I didn't know it was put on hold now or ended, the statewide firearms tracking task force. You folks want that to start up again. What happened to it?
Well, there's a problem with staffing at the state police. So it's start, you know, it's all funding and staffing. So when people say, well, the governor never defunded the police, no, there was never a call to defund the police. Yes, there was. When they put, you know, in 6004, when they put in a requirement to have, you know, CALEA accreditation, which is a private vendor, which is very expensive. Well, what do you think? Where's that going to come from? Either the police department's budget is going to go up, which I don't know. Is that happening in municipalities? They're saying, oh, yeah, just pay the, you know, let the police budget go wherever it wants. No. What they're doing is they're cutting it from somewhere else. It was a backdoor defunding. And right now, the state police is having a major staffing problem. They're trying to get troopers out as fast as they can to get them back on the road, get them trained appropriately, and get them back to work. But, you know, we can't, you know, staff all of these specialized units if the funding's not there and the personnel isn't there. I mean, if it takes 1,000 troopers to patrol the highways and in areas of the state where there are no police departments, where there's resident troopers, et cetera, if it takes 1,000 troopers to do that and we only have 800, well, how can we do specialized units? I mean, you don't need a calculator to figure this out.
No, even me.
and that's the thing. And I look and it says, well, you know, the governor is, you know, increasing policing and increased police funding. Call for more police funding. Well. Isn't that a switch from 18 months ago? You know, funny how that
Jeez,
happened.
Jeez, what's coming up in November, Greg? I have no idea.
Exactly.
Greg,
you know something?
Yeah, we got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Let me finish this up with you, Paul. The police officers in this state, they see what they're doing, what the other side is doing. They threw them to the wolves last November in 2020, and now all of a sudden they're going to praise them so that they can win elections. And I'll tell you what, communities of color and all of the people who were praising social justice back in 2020, they should feel equally as used, because those same people that jumped on their side to get votes in 2020 are ready to turn their backs on them to get votes. And that's a big problem with politics. And as long as they divide, continue to put wedges between policing and the communities, we're going to have this cycle every 4 years until somebody stops that pendulum in the middle of balance.
Republican State Rep. Greg Howard, ranking member on the General Assembly's Public Safety Committee, represents Stonington and North Stonington, also a law enforcement officer. Greg, thanks. We'll be in touch down the road. Stay safe, buddy.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Have a great night.
Appreciate it. Greg Howard there. How about that? Again, talk to somebody who's in law enforcement and lawmaking. They'll tell you.